Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, the Zencastr Radio Network, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. 85 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Thank you for joining us on this Friday afternoon for a really unique edition of the program about TV's current and future. And joining me here in New York for most of the hour, he is the popular editor-in-chief of the website and daily email newsletter, The Programming Insider, Mark Berman. Mark, welcome in. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Simon. Nice to be back.
And we're going to be talking a lot about the Screen Actors After Strike that started early this morning, both here in New York and in Hollywood. We will talk about the ongoing writer's strike, and we'll also talk about the 2023 Primetime Emmy Award nomination that came out on Wednesday. And we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Don't forget, we also have a chat room that you can be part of. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Because you want to get as much time as possible with Mark, we're only going to have one promotional break around quarter past the hour. We will have News Note Quickies, our classic trivia question of the week, and our Friday takeaway of the week. That was the week that was for Roku. We will do that all in our second half hour. Mark, the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA are on strike. What are your initial thoughts about what went down yesterday and where we stand with both their strike and the writer's strike?
Well, I think the word of note is uncertainty. I think this is a massively bad situation. I don't think, look, the actors just strike. The writer strike has been going on for about 2.5 months. There's no resolution in sight. We're not that far away from the fall when the TV season is technically supposed to start. It could go on indefinitely, and this is a very, very bad thing for our business.
If it goes on indefinitely, Mark, who loses? The broadcast networks, the cable networks, the mega content services like Netflix, Peacock, Max, et cetera? Or are we going to see this in stages where certain networks, certain services get hit very hard first and then everybody else later on?
Well, I basically think everybody loses. I mean, I from what I understand, the daytime dramas, the soaps, are not impacted. So life goes on in daytime with these soaps. But I think everybody's impacted. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, the writers, the actors, the production companies, the outlets, the fans, the viewers. I mean, look, you know, our business has changed dramatically over the last decade or so, or however long it's been. You know, I remember the days, and I'm sure you do as well, where we'd be in the middle of the summer, we'd be anxiously anticipating the fall TV season for the new shows, the resolution of cliffhangers, the return shows, with all of that. And, you know, our business is different now because there really isn't any official start anymore because everything is rolled out, you know, throughout the year and streaming, and it's all different. But I think in a situation like this, everybody's losing, and the longer it goes on, the worse it's going to get. I mean, at this point, Simon, at this point, even if miraculously this gets resolved next week, which I don't assume will, the fall TV season would be delayed anyway because they're not going to, you know, they would be in production now for the fall. So everything is pushed back. And again, I mean, let's look at the writer's strike. It's 70-something days already, The last writer's strike, I believe, was 100 days, so there's a very good chance we're going to surpass that. So the answer to your question, the long answer, is everybody's losing here. It's a losing situation.
Mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago, Fran Drescher, the former nanny and now the head of the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA, and her fellow negotiator, the chief negotiator, Damien Crabtree Ireland, did a video from their negotiating room that basically said, the talks have been extremely productive. We think we can get a deal. 2 weeks later, they don't get a deal despite a federal mediator coming in at the last minute. Then yesterday, press conference called hastily in Hollywood, which incidentally was not given a media alert to you or me or people in New York and journalists around the country. I had a chance to see it lately because of Deadline Hollywood Daily after the fact. And here's Drescher basically becoming very militaristic and saying, things got screwy in the last 2 weeks. She gave her, by the way, an interview to the HUD reporter right after that press conference. Here's what she had to say in part. I quote, as we tried to get more into the vortex of what our concerns are, that was when we started to get stonewalled. Why the change of heart?
You know, it's obvious based on what Fran Drescher has now said, and I have to tell you on a personal note, Fran was my neighbor growing up in Queens. So I knew Fran from way back when, and here she is now. It's crazy what happens in a lifetime. But obviously her tone has shifted dramatically, and you know what's really changed in the business, Simon? The streaming services. You know, I mean, it's kind of changed the equation of how this business is working, and then you have something called artificial intelligence, which is kind of replacing, you know, people in their jobs, which is another issue. So I think anything you heard in the past that we're making strides and we're this and it's looking good, it's like, well, I mean, based on what Fran has now said and based on the fact that the writer's strike is going on for this long, I think the situation is pretty dire right now.
Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, by the way, just joined us, a super fan there. Rick, thanks for coming on. You have a question or comment, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Mark, it seems more and more that the issue, no matter what anybody says from any side, it is artificial intelligence. It is this idea of if we don't get guarantees in our contracts, whether it's the writers or the actors, or even what the Directors Guild got in their contract with the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers. If we don't get guarantees in our contracts, and no matter how AI develops, and there's general consensus now that artificial intelligence is going to have a major impact in how content is created and produced, we're going to be obsolete. And whatever we have to do to get those guarantees in, get them in. And in fact, what Fran Drescher had to say, by the way, in part, in that Hollywood Reporter interview that came out yesterday, is this. It's really important that we put barricades. That's what he said. She said barricades around AI because it's going to get people out of work or put people out of work. She also added that the reason with the extension that they gave, remember the contract was supposed to expire June 30th, it went until Wednesday. Here's what Sochi said. They duped us, they meaning the Alliance, so that they can keep promoting these summer movies another 12 days. How big a deal is AI?
It's a very big deal, and, you know, I really have to stress something, Simon. You know, we're talking about the media business, but AI is affecting everything. Everything, no matter what your business is, AI is kind of stepping in here. And listen, on paper, it sounds wonderful. It's this. I've written a lot about it. But even like a fast food worker maybe is being replaced now by everything. You know, it's gotten to a point where every industry is becoming impacted by this. And I think the unfortunate conclusion of, you know, the arrival of AI or really the, you know, as it keeps getting bigger and bigger, is that people are losing their jobs in every industry. So I completely agree with what Fran says. And, you know, it's interesting, Simon. It's very interesting. Let's think about this. I think there's a perception out there, like if you're an actor, this is the perception that you're on a hit show, you're making a ton of money, you're getting residuals, you're living in a mansion, you're this, that, and the other thing. Well, not necessarily true. More often than not, there's a lot of starving actors out there. It's like being in a freelance position, like being kind of like a freelance writer. Sometimes it's feast or famine. So I think what Fran is trying to do, she's safeguarding an industry. She has the best interest in mind for all the actors. And I think AI, I think what we have to remember, as I said, is it's affecting every industry. So I think everyone has to be a little concerned about, am I going to lose my job because of this, you know? I mean, it's definitely a concern, but I feel like Fran is on top of it. I feel like this will eventually look, it's going to have to get resolved at some point. I was supposed to be going to Los Angeles for the Television Critics Association press tour. I probably would have been leaving next week. You know, the tour was canceled because of the strike, you know, and it's also getting to a point where it's kind of getting very, getting brutal. Like there's kind of a mandate out there. If you're an actor, you can't promote your stuff on social media. Your publicist cannot promote you. You can't do this. You can't do that. it's getting a little severe with this whole thing.
And we certainly know that, Mark. I mean, we have had a lot of interviews that we wanted to have with series creators and writer producers and showrunners of programs coming up on all the different services, and we said no because they will not cross the Writers Guild edict that you can't do that kind of thing. And that's not just for us. That's for TV's Top 5 of the Hollywood Reporter. That's for other podcasts that cover television. That's for people who want to get the situation, the strike on local newscasts, national news, and so on and so forth. And by the way, as we have said all along in this program, Mark, it's artificial intelligence software that is allowing people with smart TV sets and smart TV devices to watch and use television with their voice remote, even with their body language. And this has been the case, by the way, for several years now. It is not just a new thing. So AI has been a big part of this transformation of television for quite some time.
Exactly. I mean, this is not something that just happened. And when I've written about AI, I've done a lot of features on it. When I first started writing about it, I wasn't even 100% certain myself. But what exactly is it? So now I totally understand what it is, and it's made a lot of technological advancements. It's done this, it's done that. You can do this, you can do that. But the long run is people are getting replaced. People, human beings, are losing their jobs over artificial intelligence software. And we have to care for ourselves. We have to protect our backs. And we have to be concerned that this is not going to happen anymore. Mm-hmm. And I totally get it. But as I said earlier, Simon, it's not just about – it's about AI is a key piece of it. But the whole business is different now, and the rules have not been changed. Nothing's been updated in how long. And you're looking at a business that even resembled what it once was. We're an entirely different business now, you know? So, I mean, good for Fran, good for everybody. And, you know, even you and I, when in May, when we go to the upfront presentations, of course, COVID put a halt on that. But, it started going live again. I was even a little apprehensive to go to anything in live in May because I didn't want to cross picket lines, even though I'm not a Hollywood writer I am a writer, but I'm not, I'm not writing for television, but I felt like I don't want to cross any picket lines. So I think we have to stick together. I think we have a common cause. I think they have a very good leader in Fran Drescher, my former neighbor. And I think we're going to just have to wait this out and get it resolved. But the longer it takes, the more damage is going to be done.
And incidentally, we have been saying all along on this program, we've used the Rod Serling Twilight Zone of the obsolete man as sort of a metaphor for all this. This feeling among the writers and the actors that if we don't get AI, if we don't deal with this new business model of, 10-episode orders with mini writers' rooms and so on and so forth, how we do auditions, et cetera, that we're going to be obsolete as writers and actors and then everybody else in the entertainment industry. What really is concerning to me, and I think to a lot of people, is this. The question I have is this. Why is this alliance staying silent about their side of things? Why will they not talk? Why are they standing behind position papers, talking points, et cetera? Why didn't they have a press conference after SAG and AFTRA did theirs yesterday to explain their side of the story? Why when CBS here in New York, WCBS, did a report on their 11 o'clock news desk site, CBS Mornings did a report from Errol, their correspondent here in New York, what did they use for the Alliance's view? They used the Bob Iger interview, his thought about, hey, the writers and actors are screwing things up. Why aren't they talking? What is their problem?
You know what they're taking? The line that they're taking is we're not saying a word. We're remaining, stronger or silent. That's how they're kind of looking at it. We're not gonna recognize this situation. We're just gonna keep our mouth shut, and that's not a way to handle something. When you have a conflict, you have to fix it. You have to discuss. You have to work it out, and you have to fix it. And to stay silent and say nothing and pretend nothing's wrong is not the way to handle any of this. So. And I think, I have a situation. I have a relative whose child now is being impacted. He's, he's on a show right now and is going to be out of work. And it's gotten to a point where everything seems very one-sided, and the other side doesn't want to comment. They don't want to say anything. They don't want to make any changes. But you know what? You must change with the time. You have to reflect what's going on in the business. You know, once upon a time, and you remember this, Simon, a typical network series had a full season order of 22 episodes. In the old days, it was probably 30 to 35, 36. Now, a streaming show is 6 episodes, it's 8 episodes, it's 10 episodes, and little by little, I feel like these writers are probably thinking we're all being pushed out of jobs, which is there's not going to be enough work to go around for all of us. So let's sit down as a community. Let's sit down as a business. Let's work out the kinks. Let's fix this. And let's come to a decision instead of not responding and acting like nothing's happening. Because this is not going away anytime soon. And, you know, and then, you know, as time progresses, Simon, as time, you know, there's, you know, nothing's in production right now. And then there's not going to be what are these platforms going to be airing? What are they going to have on? They're not going to have scripted shows. They're going to run out, you know?
Well, they're going to have scripted shows, but they're out of Canada, or they're from independent producers, or from overseas, which is what the CW – it looks like the CW right now is a winner because they've already set up their schedules. ABC is going for unscripted and game shows for the most part, and some sports on Saturday night. Same thing now with Fox. They are doing animation, which we understand is not covered by this.
Right.
And we have to wait and see what CBS and NBC are going to do. One other thing note about the Alliance and why this PR situation, I think they're getting bad PR advice. They should fire their PR people. Is in another interview, again, I go back to the after chief negotiator, Damian Crabtree Ireland, who said that the talks broke down on Wednesday night when the Alliance disclosed that they're going to scan in the likeness, they did this new proposal against AI-oriented, that they're going to scan in the likeness of secondary performers and control the rights to that likeness for perpetuity in exchange for one day of pay. If I'm the person at AMPB, I get on the horn, and I get on the horn with everybody rather than say shut. And also, one other thing, where's the federal mediator? Why haven't we heard from him or her about this? What kind of impact does this person have? Again, I'm just mystified by the lack of PR brains on the part of the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers. It just is astonishing. One other thing before we move out of this and get into the Primetime Emmy Awards, and I also want to get into the Bob Iger interview on NBC on CNBC yesterday, which, by the way, was aired also last night in primetime. Are game shows impacted? Because you have Steve Harvey. He may be a SAG member. You have Drew Carey, if Price is Right, he may be a SAG member. We know that Jay Leno stopped production of You Bet Your Life, the syndicated show, because he's a writer, and he's a Writers Guild member, and he did this in Fellowship of the Writers. Do we know what – you said that soap operas will not be impacted, but what about game shows?
That's up in the air. That's a question that we don't know. As you just said, you know, if these individuals are all members and they're not going to cross picket lines, there's not going to be anybody to host them. You know, So basically, everyone, well, not everyone, because, again, the daytime soaps aren't, the animation isn't, but the lion's share of individuals are affected, so game shows could very well be impacted, very well. I mean, you may suddenly have to have repeats, and what you had said a moment ago, I was just about to say, like a network like the CW has a different strategy, and they took on the strategy before the strike. I mean, they were planning this, I guess, for a while, but they've acquired Canadian programming or international programming and stuff that we haven't seen that'll be new to us. So it's a way to kind of fit this thing out, but the longer it takes, the worse it's going to get.
Mark Berman, the editor-in-chief of the Programming Insider, is our guest this afternoon on this Friday afternoon edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Thank you for joining us wherever you are on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio. Sam Alpin with the market live in New York, 85 degrees at the top of the hour. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name, Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, already in the room. We'll kick off next week with a big night in addition. One of the highly anticipated shows this summer is the return of Justified in miniseries form on FX tomorrow on Tuesday night called City Primeval. We will kick things off Monday with an exclusive interview with the prolific episodic producer-director Michael Dinner. He is the executive producer and one of the showrunners of Justified City Primeval that begins on Tuesday night on FX. By the way, the Hollywood Reporter in its review earlier this week said that this is a justified spinoff that can stand, I quote, on its own 2 feet. Then, reset from earlier today, we will have the co-founder and chief executive officer of the popular game listing and promoting service, Reverend Damian Pelcione. He is also one of the key founders of the new organization known as the Independent Streaming Alliance. And I have a lot to say about how independent programmers using smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles will operate in this new venture. And finally, there's a brand new auto-centric television service that debuted yesterday called PowerTube TV. We'll have an exclusive interview with the chief executive officer, Brian Buswan, or Busone, or Busoni. You'll hear him. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Mark, before we get to the primetime Emmys, the Bob Iger interview on CNBC FA, coming up by David Baber, maybe the interview of the year so far. From Sun Valley, Idaho, where a lot of the media moguls are having their annual retreat from Allen and Company. And Iger had a lot to say. And one of the things he said that was really a revelation is he thinks that the linear broadcast and cable model is broken his words. And that he said he gave a sense that ABC, Freeform, and the other cable networks that ABC has, that they may at some point be up for sale.
Oh, it's absolutely broken, without a doubt. I mean, you know, one of the things that I've done through the course of my career is I track the ratings. You know, I look at the numbers very closely. And it has just gotten to a point, the piece of the pie for the broadcast networks now is so much smaller that, and you know, let's assume there's no strike, everything's normal, production's going on. If you're a producer, you don't want to go on a broadcast network. You want to go on a streamer or, you know, because, the lion's share of the quality product is ending up on the streaming services because at this point, you know, a broadcast platform is kind of a fractured platform right now. Will that eventually change? I don't believe so. I think we have to kind of live with what we have now. And I think anyone that's in production that's on a broadcast network, they have to have a digital component to it. And they have to, you know, it has to be, you know, very active in social media. So it's the old days of I'm going to bring a show to a broadcast network and get it on. And you have these massive hit shows on a broadcast. So those shows don't exist anymore. You know, even a show like, let's talk about a show like NCIS, for example, in its heyday, this was a show that was bringing in about 25 million viewers, 20 to 25 on a weekly basis. Now it doesn't even get 10 million. And that's the top-rated, scripted show on that's the most-watched show on any broadcast network. So it's gotten to a point. I mean, you think of a show like Friends, for example, or a Seinfeld, in their heyday, the kind of audiences they would get. If you put them on a broadcast network now, forget it. They're going to get a minimal audience, and that's just how it is right now. So will this change? No, I don't think it will change. And I think – but there's also – listen – streaming is not a perfect platform either. There's also a lot of issues with streaming that's got to be. The kinks have to be fixed as well. So that's also a platform that needs some repair. But I think the state of our business right now is kind of in a complete disarray, Simon. I know I sound negative today, right? It just doesn't sound good. But, you know, I still love TV, whether it's on a streamer or on a broadcast network. Give me a good show and I'm going to watch it.
And on the flip side, there are some people who believe that the mega content, as I call them, the mega content services, are starting to get their act together. Netflix, their stock is now at $450 a share and climbing higher because of the ad-supported tier, because of the password sharing deal, because they've got the backlog of programming that they can work with, the fact they're in the video games business, and gaming is now becoming a thing on interactive television. So if they want to take their mobile games and put them on interactive TV, fine. There's a sense that that HBO with Max, that Warner Bros. Discovery with Max, that Disney with Disney Plus, because of the ad-supported tiers, because they see that more and more advertisers are going from linear and cable, broadcast and cable to these services, and all these other services, what we call the fast channels now, on multi-channel bundles, some of whom are now getting into the original content business, both scripted and unscripted, that things might get better on that front. However, if you're an ABC station affiliate, if you're somebody working at Freeform and FX and so forth, I wonder if you've heard this, if you've seen this interview, and everybody should see this interview from the get-go, straight through. You have to wonder what they're thinking right now.
Well, you know, I think the biggest problem right now is streaming. And this is an issue, Simon. You know, the broadcast networks right now, the one category that kind of is still very healthy is live sports. You know, you put NFL football, put Sunday Night Football on NBC, you're still getting a massive size audience, which, you know, and that brings in a lot of revenue for the network. Anytime, you know, the Super Bowl, you know. So here's the issue with streaming. So let's say, for argument's sake, a broadcast network is not going to air the Super Bowl. It's going to be a streaming service. But here's the problem. Do they have the bandwidth to support a live sporting event? And there's been problems in the past where, you know, if you miss a single second of a live sporting event, you could be missing the biggest, you know, the biggest thing in a game. So I think before everybody's, you know, streaming, it's taking over, and streaming. There's still the main issue is the bandwidth. Can streamers support a live sporting event that's going to bring in a massive size audience? Because can they do it? And it's not proven that they can. So as much as, and we're going to talk about the Emmys, I know, we're going to talk most of the quality shows on streaming services or a cable network, that is. But, I mean, basically streamers, but they have the quality stuff, but they don't necessarily can support everything. So that's got to be worked out as well. And sports continues to carry past. And one last thing I'll say, I'm not predicting that the linear platform is becoming extinct, but that's never going to happen. That's not going to happen. It's just very diluted right now.
Well, one thing that I've been suggesting, both on this program and also I do a weekly TV sports segment on Sports Newswire on Sports Grid Network, is that if you are a linear broadcast, a linear cable network, either national or regional, that if you're going to focus on cable distribution or satellite distribution to be your bread and butter, you better think again and you better start being involved with smart TV sets, smart devices, and especially multi-channel bundles. Because it seems that's where the viewership is going, and that's where the advertisers are going. And we're seeing this regional sports networks. By the way, every CBS sports event is now simulcast on Paramount Plus. Every NBC sports event is simulcast on Peacock. ABC the next day on Hulu or somewhere else. Fox, Tubi the next day. So it's going to be very interesting the next couple of years to see what happens. And by the way, we are going to see exclusive NFL games this year on Peacock. We're going to see this one exclusive game on ESPN Plus. So we'll see what happens.
Right.
Let's turn to the 2023 Primetime Emmy Award nominations that were announced on Wednesday. What's your initial thought about that?
Well, you know, you look at the list and you see, well, what are the nominated shows? So, for example, if you go to the drama category, is there anybody from a broadcast network? The answer is no. You go to the outstanding comedy category, is there any entry from a broadcast network? And yes, there's one, and that's one out of eight nominees. So at first glance, and this has been written about for years now, the quality shows, the shows that are getting the accolades, the Emmys, the Globes, whatever, they're airing elsewhere. They're not airing on a broadcast platform anymore. So I think that's a telltale sign of where our industry has gone. And also, when I look at the list of nominees, it also tells me there's a lot of good television, whether, you know, there's a lot of very diverse, solid programs on. And, you know, and every year I look at the list, as I'm sure you do as well, and you say, well, this person got snubbed, or this show got snubbed, or this, that, and the other thing. It just isn't room for everyone, because there really is a lot to consider, and that's a very good thing.
I believe this year, I think there was, what, seven or eight best comedy series nominees, seven or eight best drama series nominees, five or six in the made-for-TV movie, five or six in the miniseries. I thought it was one thing that really stuck out to me was how well HBO did in Best Drama, where four of the nominees were HBO shows. House of the Dragons, also The Last of Us, Succession, of course, and one other that bothers my mind. But anyway, the fact they got four in one year is really something. And that two of them were genre shows.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last time HBO accomplished that was back in the 90s. I mean, they, you know, it only proves that there is still, you know, the quality shows are still on a platform like HBO. They had a very good year of nominations. They had a lot of good programming. And, yeah, there's a lot to consider here. There really is a lot. But then, you know, the other issue with Simon is, here's the other issue we have to consider right now. The telecast, I believe, is on September 18th, I believe, and on Fox. Is it going to air? Will it happen because of the strike? what's going to happen? Are the actors going to come? Or that's the next thing that we have to think about. What exactly is going to happen? Are they going to delay it? I don't know. It's kind of a little uncertain.
We're going to take a quick break at the bottom of the hour, and when we come back, we'll have more thoughts about the Primetime Emmy nominations. We'll do a lightning round with Mark Berman, the Programming Insider Editor-in-Chief. Plus, we'll have News No Quickies, our classic trivia question of the week last time around with this particular question, and our takeaway of the week this Friday afternoon. That was the week that was for Roku. All that after we pause quickly at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com. Speaker.com, Tune.com, together reaching nearly 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, coming your way later tonight, it's the Honeycomb Hideout with host Johnny Davis. You'll be well entertained by Johnny and crew. That's the Honeycomb Hideout on Blog Talk Radio tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon, 14th of July. 2023. Sam Rabin will be live from New York, joined here in the Big Apple by the Programming Insider Editor-in-Chief himself, Mark Berman. And Mark, staying with the 2023 Primetime Emmys, let's do a little lightning round, if you will. First up, was there any one show that you were especially happy to see get nominated, or performance that you were happy to see get nominated?
Well, it's show and performance. I feel like the standout show for me, per se, is The Bear. I'm kind of a little perplexed why it's in the comedy category. I don't necessarily consider it a comedy. I consider it more of like a drama, or maybe a drama with some comedic elements. But I think that show is just, that to me is my pick of the year. And I'm so excited to see that on there. I'm also happy to see that The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel got acknowledged in its final season. I don't expect it's going to win anything this year, but I'm happy to see it in the category. But really, the show that I was rooting for was The Bear, and I'm happy to see it as outstanding comedy. I'm happy to see it get 3 acting nominations.
Mm-hmm. And we'd like you out there to weigh in with your thoughts. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anywhere you're catching us live here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaking to Radio, or use the chat room as Rick Webb, our superfan from Philadelphia, is doing. And that room is SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. For me, Mark, the nomination I'm most happy about is Daisy Jones and the Six for Best Miniseries. Disclosure, we had Will Graham, the executive producer and showrunner of the series, also does a League of Our Own for Prime Video. I love the show. Riley Keough, wonderful actress. We first saw her on television in The Girlfriend Experience. That was a breakthrough role for Stars. She got nominated also. I was really happy to see that series get nominated. It really turned out to be one of the great miniseries so far this year. And it also brought back a lot of interest in 70s rock and the whole idea of rock bands reuniting. So very, very happy about that. Biggest Emmy snub?
Who I think got snubbed?
Yeah, either network or network show or performance.
Well, I want to tell you, I was really disappointed to not see Harrison Ford nominated for Shrinking. I think he gave a really unusual performance for him. The fact that he's doing a regularly scheduled series, he should have definitely been nominated. I am happy to see, however, there was a lead actor nomination in the category, so I was happy about that. But I was really surprised that Harrison Ford was nominated. Jason Segel was for Shrinking. I was also really surprised, actually. I felt the best episode of The Bear for me this season was the Christmas-themed episode where the family got together. I feel like Jamie Lee Curtis gave such an amazing performance as the mother, who was so disturbed and so frantic and so everything. I was so convinced she would be nominated in a guest actress category in a comedy, and she didn't, so that kind of disappointed me. But and then there was a few others that I was a little, I thought Atlanta should have gotten more acknowledgement for its final season. I've always been a fan of that, but I think overall those were the two that Jamie Lee Curtis and Harrison Ford. What about you?
Well, for me, on the network level, I thought Peacock deserved more for Poker Face and for Mrs. Davis. Yes, Natasha Lyonne did get nominated for her wonderful performance in Poker Face, but the show should have been, the writing and directing should have been, and Mrs. Davis, I cannot believe that show was totally totally bummed. I was very, very surprised at that. Another, I thought, snub to me, a disappointment, was A Small Light, the Nat Geographic miniseries that got great attention, got additional runs, the Holocaust drama involving the friend of Anne Frank. I thought the woman who played that friend should have gotten nominated. It was a marvelous miniseries. It got great critical acclaim late in the season. It was also shown the first episode was shown on ABC, was shown on Freeform, was shown on Disney+. It got great, as I said, critical reviews. Disclosure, Susanna Fogel, the executive producer and director of the show, director of the first and last episodes, was on our program. Marvelous interview. So I thought that to me was a big snub. And on the game show level, where was Let's Make a Deal? Where was Wayne Brady in the game show series and host? You can argue that Let's Make a Deal had its best season yet, and That's My Jam should not have been in the game show category. I would have put that in variety show for sure. But I thought Deal should have been in there, and I thought Wayne Brady should be up for best game show host. He was fantastic this year. The show has really become – it's a game show with variety elements, and I think the show is running on all cylinders. I think it's 15th year, best year yet. I'm shocked that didn't make the game show category. And then Goodside, the director, should have been nominated also.
Right. I agree. Don't disagree. I was actually very happy. I've watched every episode of Survivor from that first episode way back when. Every year I say, why isn't Survivor nominated in that reality in the competition category? And I'm happy to see it finally back in the category. For me, that's my thing.
Mm-hmm. And let's give some credit. Let's give credit where to the Emmy judges, the Emmy as a TV Academy. I'm happy that the game show category is going to be in the primetime Emmy Awards as opposed to the daytime, especially given the growth of the category, particularly in primetime shows, game show. By the way, where was Game Show Network? I can make also an argument that Leah Remini should have been up for People Puzzler hosting that show, and John Michael Higgins for America Says, and the new version of Split Second. I know Split Second, I thought it came in maybe after the qualification period, but I thought both of those two should have been given serious consideration as the host. On the other hand, I'm happy that both Ken Jennings and Mayim Bialik did get nominated for their role on Jeopardy, and not
yes.
just one.
Well deserved.
What early predictions would you like to make in terms of who will win when the Emmys happen, whenever they happen, whether it's mid-September on Fox or given the situation with the strikes? Could be pushed to November or even January of next year.
Well, I think Outstanding Drama Series is a no-brainer. I think that is Succession. I mean, 27 nominations. This thing is riding a wave of – I think Succession's got to win. I think the common consensus for Outstanding Comedy would be Ted Lasso for its final season. I, however, would prefer to see it be The Bear. So if I was answering – who will win? I would say Ted Lasso. Who should win? The Bear. So I think Succession, definite for drama. I would like to see The Bear win for comedy. I think it's more deserving than Ted Lasso, but I think Ted Lasso probably is going to take it again. In terms of outstanding lead actor in a drama, I've got to go with Bob Odenkirk for Better Call Saul. I've got to go with him, without a doubt. I think
me too. Me too, Mark.
Yeah.
Me too. It's time, finally.
It's time. I think Sarah Snook is going to take it for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama. I'm not necessarily sure why Kerry Russell got nominated, but I think she's the one to beat in that. And that's what I would pick in comedy for Outstanding Lead Actress. I think it's got to go to Quinta Brunson again. I think she's the one to beat. And it really is I'm happy to see so many nominations for Abbott Elementary because it's kind of keeping – you know, a broadcast network alive in the Emmys. And in terms of comedy series, I think it's an easy pick. It's got to be Jeremy Allen White. By and large, I think he's the one to beat.
By the way, the other HBO show, drama that's up is The White Lotus, which was miniseries. Now, because of the second season, it's in the drama category. I agree with you. I think it's Bob Odenkirk's year for Best Actor in a Drama for Better Call Saul, and maybe even be Rhea Seehorn's year for Best Actress or Best Supporting Actress in that role. I'd love to see them both get it, but certainly Bob Odenkirk should. Totally agree about Succession, although keep your eye on The Last of Us. That may take it. There's a strong possibility. And don't discount The White Lotus either because of the fondness people have for that show. My Big Emmy prediction is, and this is a lead-in to what we're going to talk about with the takeaway of the week, I think that Weird, the Al Yankovic story, will win, and it will become the first Roku program to win the best movie category. And Daniel Radcliffe will win for his performance as Yankovic. I think I think this film has been a critical darling. Prey, the Netflix movie, could take it in the camp, but I think that right now all the momentum is with Roku on taking the made for TV movie category with Weird, the Al Yankovic story, and Radcliffe's performance. And don't be. And by the way, one of the things I've been very angry about with the Academy has been the lack of made-for-TV movie nominees in the writing, acting, directing, because it's combined with miniseries. I still think they should break those categories apart, writing, directing, acting. But it's nice to see that there were some writing and directing nominations for made-for-TV movies in those combined categories this year.
I agree, totally.
Yeah. And for best miniseries, it's going to be a tough competition. I think Daisy Jones and the Six has a shot, but there's some other ones, too, that might get in also. So I think that will be one of the most contested categories of the night.
I think Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story, is going to win. I think that's the one that's going to take it. I feel like that's the one that's got the momentum. But I'll be honest with you, I didn't watch it, Simon. I just couldn't watch it. It's something I just couldn't watch it. But from what I've heard, what I've read, I think that's the one to take the Emmy. But yeah, and another shoo-in, I think. Everybody loves Jennifer Coolidge. I think she's taken home another trophy for the White Lotus in the supporting category. I think she's got that locked up. I think that's a lock for her. But it's all, you know what, it's always fun to see who's going to win. It's always fun. It's obviously nice that the pandemic has, you know, subsided. We could see them, but we don't know if they're going to come this year. It's a little tricky.
Oh, well, one more category let's talk before we go. What do you think about the variety categories? The late-night talk shows, late-night, you know, all that stuff.
I think Stephen Colbert is going to win on CBS. I think SNL. I mean, SNL's been around for how many years already? I think for Outstanding Talk Show, it's going to go to The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And in the variety category, I think SNL. I mean, what do you think?
It always wins every year. I would love to see a black lady sketch show get it, given the fact it was just canceled after four seasons, and Robin Thede is a wonderful talent. She's working on a new show for Max. I'd love to see a breakthrough for that program. It did win writing last year. I'd like to see the show get its final a little final note of triumph and win the best sketch show. But you're right. Saturday Night Live is certainly a favorite. But I'd like to see Black Lady Sketch Show win it.
That definitely would be a big thing if that happened. That would be a big thing. That would be a really good thing to see. Unlikely, but you never know. Who knows?
You can never think what these judges are going to do. They sometimes will surprise you.
Exactly. So let's hope.
And one final thought from you overall, given the how long do you think these strikes are going to last?
I think it's going to go on for a while. I don't see this ending this summer. I hope it'll get resolved in the fall. I'm going to predict. I mean, I certainly have no clue, and it's only a raw prediction. I think this is going to get resolved in September. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's before that. But considering we're in mid-July already, I don't see this being resolved. What about you? What do you think?
Well, we have said all along, Mark, it's got to get resolved. There is common ground that can happen, and it starts when everybody opens their mouth, get what they need to say out of the brain, out of the mouth, out in the open, talk to us. Let's see where everybody stands and get back to that bargaining table. And whoever that federal mediator is, get that person back in to both situations, writers and actors, and let's work this deal out. Not everybody's going to get everything they want. However, I think there's an opportunity for common ground here. And I also think there's an opportunity to resolve a lot of issues, both with the writers and with the actors. And yes, we definitely need to have, if not firm guarantees, at least parameters regarding AI. We got to remember, this is a fast-moving target. There's a lot we don't know. We can't wait until it blows up in our face. And we've got to get talking. We've got to get parameters set that everybody can live with. And that can be done. But it has to be done at the bargaining table. It cannot be done at the picket line. And everybody has to talk. Stop, again, to the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers, stop being silent. This technique isn't work. You are the villains here. If you want to change the image, you got to start talking. Talk to us. Talk to TV's Top 5. Talk to Mark. But talk to the broadcast network, newscast, et cetera. But get your voice out there. And the same thing with the actors and the same thing with the writers. That's going to make the difference here. Public relations is very, very important. That means you relate to us. You relate to the public. You don't shut us out. So I really do hope so. And by the way, I'm going to say it again. We would love to have anybody, any executive from the Writers Guild, anybody from Fran Dresser's welcome to come on this program, the SAG-AFTRA people, and the Alliance of TV Motion Producers. We would love to have you on. We will treat you fairly. We'll give you this is not going to be like a two-minute soundbite. We will, you come on the air live. We'll allow our listeners to question you and offer their feedback. So the invite is open, and we hope that you take advantage of it. And it's time. It really is time. We cannot let this strike screw this the TV field up. I agree with you, Mark. We can't let this cannot run long. We've got to start getting answers. And the only time we get answers is if they show the bargaining table.
Right. I agree. Totally.
If you want more wonderful thoughts from Mark Berman, our guest today, all you got to do is go to programminginsider.com. It's programminginsider.com. It's a fantastic website, a wonderful daily email newsletter. I highly recommend it. You get a nice trivia contest, all sorts of wonderful facts and things about TV, the latest news. Mark does a great job with it. Mark, thank you again for coming on late notice. We really appreciate you and your thoughts, and have yourself a great rest of your summer. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Simon. The same to you. I'll see you soon, hopefully.
You got it. Take care, and hopefully greater times ahead.
Yes, absolutely. You take care.
You too. All the greatest. Mark Bremer, the Programming Insider, joining me here in New York. And now, time for some news note quickies. Yes, we do have some news aside from the writers and actors strike. The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon, will begin on ABC, on AMC, that is, AMC and AMC Plus September 10th. Norman Reedus reprises his role as Dixon with the series produced in and around Paris, France. Former Netflix content overseer Cindy Holland, who left that role in 2020, will become the new global chief executive of production outlet Sister. Sister's former TV series include The Power and Gangs of London. About 2.3 million people watched the annual ESPY Awards on ABC Wednesday night, a special place during its time period among broadcast networks behind NBC and CBS. And Nick Faldo, the former lead analyst on CBS's PGA Tour and the Masters golf event, will be in that role for NBC at the British Open next weekend. And that is news notes for today. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. Last time we're offering this question, so get your thinking caps on. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win an Uber card from AMC Network. Here's the question. Who played Gidget on The New Gidget? We are talking about the second version of Gidget on television that ran in syndication from 1986 to 1988 from Columbia Pictures. Who played Gidget on The New Gidget? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the correct answer, you win. One more time, here is the question. Who played Gidget on The New Gidget? Email me, if you know, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your mailing address. We only take email entries. If you're a previous winner or a guest on this program, you are not eligible. And if we don't get a winner by the end of this Friday, we will host the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter to start your weekend. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in, so do so, and all the very best. And now it's time for our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week, where we highlight a development or two that happened this week that we think you should remember because it could very well impact the way you watch and use television. Our takeaway of the week this week has the name, That Was the Week That Was, for Roku. Remember That Was the Week That Was? For those of you who don't know, it was a satire of politics and all sorts of other news and culture that first started on the BBC in the 1960s and then in the mid-60s became a hit for a year and a half on NBC on Friday nights. Had that great theme song by Ron Granger, That Was the Week That Was, sung by Nancy Ames here in the United States, Milton Martin in England. And I thought that I could use this title, and I did see the show. You can, by the way, catch an episode or two of both the British version and the American version at YouTube. I think this was a perfect way to describe what Roku did this week. Every single day, they made news. Back on Monday, our opening guest was Jonathan Botax. He is the former Cablevision Systems executive who now runs Playworks, the interactive games on television service that now has a deal with Roku to show Wheel of Fortune that you can play on your television set with your voice or your voice remote. Incidentally, shortly after our interview with Jonathan, which you can find at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, and our more than 20 podcast affiliates, Roku made a deal with another company called Volley to have Jeopardy available interactively on the television set that you could play with your voice. Incidentally, we are trying to get Volley to come on this program in the next few weeks. Then on Tuesday, Roku made a big deal with Shopify that ties in with their ongoing campaign to make what they call action ads, where you can order products and services on the spot using your voice or a voice remote when you watch the spots on Roku. And what's going to happen with Shopify is that Shopify's national clients are going to make ads specifically for Roku. When you run them on a Roku device, whether it's a TV set with Roku as the operating system or a plug-in device, streaming stick, et cetera, if you see these ads, you can order their services or their products on the spot. Same thing with their deal with Walmart that they made last year. These action ads are now going to start rolling out in a major way, and I can tell you that the Roku people and the Shopify people are very excited about what this deal can become. Then came the Emmy nominations on Wednesday, where, like I said before, with Mark Berman, Roku got a Best Made-for-TV Movie nomination for Weird, the Al Yankovic story, and Danny Radcliffe's performance as Yankovic. Then, yesterday, Roku made a deal with FreeWheel. That's the ad tech subsidiary of Comcast, the nation's largest cable operator, the owners of NBCUniversal, where they're going to use ad tech to do all sorts of different things, including the use of these action ads. And then came the news that Roku Channel is going to run on Google television sets. So if you have a TV set that's Google TV as the operating system, you can now get the Roku channel. And finally, late yesterday, Roku made a deal with the CW, where they will get second window rights to a new unscripted series that the CW will run first starting in August. Deal after deal after deal after deal after deal, Roku made the most in terms of news this week. So when it wasn't the Screen Actors Guild, the Writers Guild strikes, the Primetime Emmy nominations got the news, Roku got the news. I believe that if you have Roku stock, your stock went up at least $9 or $10 this week to around $80 a share. So bottom line, Roku is getting more and more involved with interactive television, with interactive ads, with interactive products and services. They're really making a move. They're doing more with original content. They're getting the Roku channel on in other devices besides Roku, either Roku operating system TV sets or Roku smart TV devices. Roku is really, really plunging headlong into their future as a channel creator, as a content aggregator, and a content maker, as well as a major player in the world of interactive television. And who knows where Roku is going to go next. Once again, I want to thank Mark Berman very, very much for coming on late notice to give us his thoughts about the writers and actors strikes going on, as well as the 2023 Primetime Emmy nominations. Again, if you want to catch Mark's wonderful work, go to ProgrammingInsider.com. That's ProgrammingInsider.com. That's where his website is. You can also subscribe to his daily email newsletter. I get it every day. It's always wonderful. It's a great read. He always has the latest news. He has wonderful interviews. He's got lots of trivia, like on this day, on this month, on this year, things happen. And he also has a great trivia contest as well. And again, I want to thank Mark for coming on. And once again, we want to open the invite. If anybody from SAG and ASTRA, anybody from the Writers Guild, anybody from the Alliance of TV Host Producers wants to come on this program and talk about where they stand with this whole strike situation, we would like to have them on. And I strongly urge, personal thought, I strongly urge the Alliance to get off their current PR posture and realize that if they don't stop doing what they're doing, they will be the villains and deserve to be in this whole situation. Their image is not great, and it's time to make a change. And let's hope everybody gets back to that bargaining table ASAP. There is a real fear that the scripted television world could be permanently damaged if a settlement in both these situations is not achieved the same way that it was achieved a few weeks ago with the Directors Guild of America. Coming your way on Monday on Smarty Televised, big 90-minute edition, starting off with the prolific producer-director of episodic television, Michael Dinner. His latest work, executive producer and showrunner of the new FX miniseries, Justified, City Primeval, which is getting great reviews from all over the place. Then, the co-founder and chief executive of the popular gay and lesbian roaming service, Reverie Damian Pelliccioni. He is also one of the key people behind the new organization known as the Independent Streaming Alliance. We'll hear what they are up to. And from the new television service, PowerTube TV, that is running on Roku and other places, chief executive officer of the parent company, Boss One Media, Brian Bossone, or Bossone. And next Friday, among our guests, we'll have a producer who decided, I'm not going to wait to sell my TV series concept to start producing it. I'm producing it now. Then I'll get somebody to run it. The project is called Mother, May I Have a Kidney? It's a dramedy, and you will meet the creator, writer, and executive producer of this project, Veronica Reyes Howe. Other guests as well. That's coming your way next Monday, next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Smarty Televised. And we may have an extra episode also as well. We'll keep you posted, let you know for sure on Monday. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, we're always available 24/7 on our website, from On Podium, tomorrowbetelevised.com, and all of our great podcast sites, whether it is the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Zencast's Greater Network, Verbal, Fathom, RadioPublic.com, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music. You know, check us out and tell your friends all about it. We'd love to hear from you. What's your thoughts about the writer's strike and the actor's strike and where things stand with the Motion Picture and TV Alliance? What's your thoughts about the Primetime Emmy nominations? Did your favorite show get nominated or not? Love to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, and find me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Simon Applebaum, Twitter, UBC Simon, TWBT. Incidentally, I want to welcome people who may have tuned into our show today from a wonderful organization called Tech Renaissance in NYC. Went to their event last night. Had a chance to meet with the Office of the Mayor's, that's Mayor Eric Adams' Office of Innovation, Denise Felipe Adams. So thank you, Denise, and maybe we'll get you on the show sometime in the near future. I was really impressed with the commentary they had to say about how the mayor's office could do more with innovation, and I thank them for giving me the opportunity to talk about how television should be part of that innovation office. We'll keep you posted on the fruits of that conversation last night. But thanks to those of you that may have tuned in to join us for the first time, and I hope you make us a regular habit. And those of you in the office listening, we hope you make us a regular habit, too. Again, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. Whatever you communicate with me and how, I respond to you within 24 hours because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not those of Blog Talk Radio and other services program. Andy Toe is B-Charge General Manager. Dave Sonnenberg is Head of Content. Website certified by On Podium, the Internet's Great Podcast Outpost. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. But tomorrow be televised. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend. If you're in an area which is the hot zone, hang in there. Be as cool as you can. We'll be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and all of our podcasts and web affiliates. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe and make it great, especially if you're in an area dealing with severe flooding or severe hot weather. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.